is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
We could be in store for a tidal wave of disinformation, of completely made up video and audio that confuses people, that makes it really unclear as to what's really happening.
That was Imran Ahmed, CEO of the Center for Countering Digital Hate, on Russia already using all kinds of online disinformation to influence the November U.S. elections. Details coming up. Also, early results from South Africa's election indicate the top two parties may not perform as well as they hoped. And Zimbabwe asks for research on the viability of large-scale cannabis production. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Results are trickling in from yesterday's South Africa election. Our reporter in Johannesburg, Darren Taylor, is closely monitoring the goings-on. I first asked Darren about yesterday's turnout and the projections so far at this stage.
There were long queues. I've heard a lot of people telling me that it was it reminded them of 1994, the first democratic vote that South Africa experienced. There was that level of excitement around it, and I think it revolved around the possibility of the ANC slipping below 50%. So people turned out in droves in many places. There were problems with technology that prevented some people from voting. We'll see later how serious this has been, but at this stage it doesn't seem to have been so serious as to declare the elections not free and fair. It seems that basically there was a good vote and that South Africans are going to have their say in a credible way, and that whatever the results turn out to be, those will be accepted by the majority of parties, bar a few complaints here and there, but it should be effectively a free and fair vote that is accepted by South Africans.
So the ANC, like you said, might be slipping below 50%. How about the next biggest party, the Democratic Alliance?
Well, as far as the Democratic Alliance, the DA is concerned, experts I've spoken to are projecting it'll end on 21% of the vote. At this stage, with about 20% of votes counted, it is a little bit higher than that. But if it does end in the low 20s, it would be a pretty disappointing result for the DA. It ran on a very anti-ANC platform, of course. It ran on a platform of delivering better services than the ANC, creating millions of jobs. But it seems as if many smaller parties that were on the ballots this time around have taken away votes from both the ANC and the DA. Two big surprises at this stage. One is that Jacob Zuma's Mkhonto weSizwe party, the former president's party, seems to be making inroads nationally and taking votes away from principally the ANC, but also from other opposition parties. Now, leading into the election, political commentators and opinion polls predicted that Zuma would do well only in his home province of KwaZulu-Natal, but nowhere else. But that seems at this early stage to have been turned on its head. And the second surprise is the Patriotic Alliance, which is a new party, a new kid on the block. It looks like at this stage it's definitely going to have a presence in Parliament. It's also on track in some districts to replace the Economic Freedom Fighters, the EFF, as the country's third biggest party. Now, the Patriotic Alliance is led by a former convicted armed robber turned businessman, Gayton McKenzie. He ran on a strong anti-immigrant platform, promising to deport what he called illegal foreigners. The EFF at this stage seems to have been doing pretty disappointingly. It was adamant that it would end far above the 10% it got in the last election in 2019. But it seems at this stage that at best it will maintain that 10% that it got in the previous election.
So, with all this, Darren, when will the final tabulations be made public?
The Independent Electoral Commission here in South Africa are saying that it will be Saturday or Sunday, but at this stage, Friday, given the pace at which results are coming in from most districts and regions at this stage, it seems like you'd definitely be able to make a clear call on Friday. But the Independent Electoral Commission are telling me that Saturday or early Sunday is when the full results will be in, and then we'll know what the next step for the ruling African National Congress will be.
That was reporter Darren Taylor briefing us on the latest from Johannesburg regarding the South African election. Africa has what it takes to transform and grow its economy, but faces rigid barriers, including a sometimes unfriendly global financial architecture, according to leaders who gathered in Nairobi this week for the Africa Development Bank's annual summit. VOA's Nairobi Bureau Chief Mariama Diallo reports.
While the continent's average GDP growth is estimated to have slowed in 2023, African economies remain resilient, Africa Development Bank President Akinwumi Adesina said this week at the group's annual meetings in Nairobi.
The African Development Bank projects that Africa's real GDP growth will rise from 3.1% in 2023 to 3.7% in 2024 and 4.3% in 2025. Importantly, more than half, and that is 31 countries, achieve higher real GDP growth rates in 2023 than in 2022.
GDP, or gross domestic product, is used to measure the economic health of a country. As Africa's bank, which turns 60 this year, Adesina says the AFDB has the responsibility to mobilize financing to develop the continent. They do that work against the backdrop of major global challenges, the former Nigerian agriculture minister said.
Including heightened geopolitical tensions, the disruption of global value chains, rising food and energy prices, increasing debt service payments, and, of course, the devastating effects of climate change are everywhere. From droughts to floods, from cyclones to unpredictable weather patterns, the loss of lives and property, and enormous fiscal costs to countries.
Heavy rains and flash floods recently killed hundreds and displaced thousands across East Africa, where the UN estimates that 1.6 million people were affected. In Kenya, the rains killed over 280 and displaced about 53,000 people and destroyed thousands of crops. Kenya's president, William Ruto, was among those who attended the summit, along with leaders and officials from Zimbabwe, Somalia, Namibia, Rwanda, Congo-Brazzaville, Libya, and others. Ruto said with the world's 10 fastest-growing economies being in Africa, the continent has what it takes to succeed, but it faces the rigid barrier of the global financial architecture that is misaligned with the continent's aspirations.
We routinely borrow from international markets at rates far above those paid by the rest of the world, often up to 8 or 10 times more.
Ruto, Adesina, and other leaders called for a reform of the global financial architecture to mobilize even more financial resources, they say, are needed to accelerate Africa's growth and development.
The debt problem faced by many countries, which consume the largest share of national resources and starve development agenda, we are a direct result of this unjust financial architecture. This situation not only makes debt unsustainable, but also undermines growth, prevents countries from investing in resilience.
That sentiment was echoed by African Union Commission Chairperson Moussa Faki Mahamat, who said the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic, which tested economies worldwide and especially in Africa, is still being felt.
Tous nos États membres ont été pris dans l'engrenage d'un endettement toujours pernicieux.
He says that all African Union member states have been caught in the spiral of an ever-pernicious debt, which keeps them under the control of lenders with their suffocating demands, despite the numerous promises to alleviate this burden. An economic outlook published during the summit by the bank lays out a mix of policies that are needed to address some of the continent's challenges. These include promoting local production and diversifying import sources to address rising food prices and helping reform the current global financial architecture to help with debt restructuring. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Nairobi.
Voters in Madagascar are awaiting the results of parliamentary elections. They cast ballots yesterday in the Indian Ocean Island state, where President Andry Rajoelina was re-elected late last year in elections widely viewed as controversial, with low voter turnout and an opposition boycott. Rajoelina's ruling Tanora Malagas Vonono party is hoping to secure a majority in these elections as well. Last year's election period was marred by weeks of protests by opposition party leaders and their supporters. Rajoelina ascended to power in a 2009 coup, prompting an exodus of foreign investors from the country. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. And for more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. The U.S. and Kenya have announced new initiatives and public diplomacy programs to elevate culture as a diplomatic platform that will bring people together, preserve cultural heritage, and strengthen the economies of the two countries. The State Department's Ambassador's Fund for Cultural Preservation will continue the United States' long-term investments across Africa to preserve and protect cultural heritage and boost tourism. Among the projects, there will be new exchange programs linking African filmmakers and musical artists with U.S. academic and professional organizations. The initiatives follows Kenyan President Ruto's recent state visit to Washington, D.C. U.S. officials and cyber experts say Russia is already spreading disinformation ahead of the U.S. election, using fake online accounts and bots to hurt President Joe Biden and other Democrats. U.S. Director of National Intelligence Avril Haines recently said Russia and other foreign adversaries are using the latest innovations in artificial intelligence to influence the November elections, but the U.S. has greatly improved its ability to safeguard election security and identify foreign disinformation campaigns. Imran Ahmed, the chief executive officer of the Center for Countering Digital Hate, tells VOA's Carol Van Dam the government has not done nearly enough to counter the threat.
We've been testing AI platforms, voice platforms, image platforms, and we're in the process of studying video platforms. And what we found is that there are very few guardrails on some of the world's biggest AI platforms on cloning the images, the voices, and the video appearance of leading politicians in the US, and around the world, which means that we could be in store for a tidal wave of disinformation, of completely made up video and audio that confuses people, that makes it really unclear as to what's really happening and starts to make people doubt reality itself.
And I've seen some of these examples, what you're talking about with these videos that are made up. I can't tell the difference. I cannot see. It's so seamless and so good. I mean, what are people supposed to do if they're trying to find out if it's real or fake?
Well, the truth is that the professionals in my research team often can't tell the difference between real and fake. I don't know how the average person, when scrolling through their social media feed, would be able to tell what's real or fake. The truth is that we need to have an industry-wide solution, whether that is watermarking these images, these audio with a tracking pixel, with metadata, with other creative solutions that then, when it appears on a social media platform, they flag that because they can see that metadata, they can see that tracking pixel, pixel that it is actually inauthentic. You know, that would be a solution, but you need industry-wide agreement on it. And the truth is that industry is not going to come to that agreement. They're not going to deliberately cripple the quality of what they're producing unless we set those regulatory standards at a national or even international level. Our democracies are worth a lot more than the short-term profits of a few AI companies, because the truth is they couldn't make their money unless they were operating in prosperous, secure, and safe democracies.
Besides the legislators and the AI providers, like you're pointing out, maybe there's where we could set guardrails. What about the social media providers? Are they doing anything right now to try to scope this out and prevent it from continuing?
I think one thing we've learned over the years dealing with social media companies is that the best content for them is controversial content. So content that is, you know, Joe Biden in a hospital bed or Donald Trump with, you know, Jeffrey Epstein, as we managed to get the image generators to produce, that's great content for them because people will be arguing for hours over whether it's real or not, what it means, having a go at the people who are posting that content. And that's manna from heaven because they rely on engagement. Engagement drives eyeballs, eyeballs drive ads, and that's how they make their money. So social media companies have got no incentive to fix the problem, quite the opposite.
How effective are these online fake bots and other types of fake online messaging?
We're in the first generation of generative AI here, and we've already seen it affecting elections around the world this year and last year. I suspect that we haven't yet hit that the event that will really trigger fury in action, but I suspect that will come when it's too late, when it's been deployed at mass scale and significantly influenced an election somewhere in the world in one of the major democracies. And when that happens, you know, something terrible could happen as a result. And I pray that this time, unlike with social media, that before the terrible event happens, that we do something to ensure that predictable, foreseeable potential harms that organizations like mine are showing evidence can happen because of the lack of guardrails and the lack of curation of these platforms, that we take action to avert these crises before they happen.
That is Imran Ahmed, the CEO of the Center for Countering Digital Hate. He was speaking with my colleague Carol Van Dam in Washington. Jurors are deliberating in a criminal case against U.S. presidential candidate Donald Trump. He is charged with falsifying financial records to hide a payment to an adult film star to influence the outcome of the 2016 election. Campaigning for this year's election continued outside the New York courthouse. VOA correspondent Scott Stearns has the story.
For most of the last 6 weeks, Donald Trump has complained that the charges against him are political.
There's never been anything like this in the history of our country. It's a scam. It's election interference at a level that's never taken place before.
President Joe Biden's campaign has largely refrained from commenting on its opponent's trial until this week and a Biden campaign appearance by actor Robert De Niro outside the courthouse.
When Trump ran in 2016, it was like a joke. This buffoon running for president. No, never could happen. We'd forgotten the lessons of history that showed us other clowns who weren't taken seriously until they became vicious dictators. With Trump, we have a second chance, and no one is laughing now.
Trump advisor Jason Miller says that shows Trump was right all along.
So the Biden folks have finally done it. After months of saying the politics had nothing to do with this trial, they showed up and made a campaign event out of a Lower Manhattan trial day for President Trump.
From midnight tweets to drinking bleach to tear gas.
De Niro narrates a new commercial from the Biden campaign that it says highlights Trump's, quote, increasingly unhinged and dangerous quest for power since he lost the 2020 election.
Now he's running again, this time threatening to be a dictator, to terminate the Constitution.
If I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath.
Trump wants revenge, and he'll stop at nothing to get it. I'm Joe Biden, and I approve this message.
The Trump campaign says Biden is trying to distract voters from his own failings. Spokeswoman Caroline Levitt.
because Joe Biden is weak, he's pathetic, he's a threat to democracy, not only with this weaponization of our justice system, but with his wide-open border invasion that is allowing a mass invasion of illegal people into this country. Terrorists, criminals, our economy is in shambles, we are heading towards World War III. Those are the issues real Americans care about.
A PBS NewsHour NPR Marist poll says a majority of American voters are not following the trial. The jury's deciding whether to acquit Trump as the first U.S. president to stand criminal trial or make him a convicted felon running for president. Scott Stearns, VOA News.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week. Right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
The U.S. State Department says it is barring several current and former Ugandan officials from visiting the country for alleged involvement in significant corruption or gross violations of human rights. They include Speaker of Parliament Anita Among, Minister of State for Finance Amos Ligolobi, and Peter Iluolu, a former deputy chief of the Uganda's People's Defense Forces. The U.S. government is also taking steps to impose visa restrictions on other Ugandan officials for undermining the democratic process and repressing members of marginalized or vulnerable populations in Uganda. The United Nations Children's Agency, UNICEF, is condemning what it calls a distressing 70% rise in grave violence against children in Mali, Burkina Faso, and Niger. The UNICEF Office for West and Central Africa says grave violations against children in the Central Sahel increased by more than 70% in last 3 months of 2023 compared with the previous 3 months. The French news agency AFP says most cases involved recruitment and use of children in armed groups and the killing and maiming of children. A UN report on children and armed conflict published in June 2023 reported 423 children were killed in 2022 in attacks by groups affiliated to Al-Qaeda, the Islamic State group, or security forces, mainly in the Sahel.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.
VOA Africa has a wide variety of programs for you. News, lifestyle, health, politics, youth, women, sports. We have it all. Tune into our discussion shows on the radio, television, and the internet on voaafrica.com.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.